Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
This is part two of our two-part special with Alistair Gray and Denise Strages from the Academy of Homeopathic Education in the United States. Make sure to catch up on part one, which is episode 163.
If you're going to a hairdresser and paying for a mani-pedi, but you're not going to put out for somebody to give you advice for your kid's health, like something is wrong.
And then you are in all of the homeopathic groups on Facebook. So there is something there that needs to be done. Either we need to bridge the gap or they need to bridge the gap and come up with what do they need. It's not always about money. I'm 100% sure it's not about money, because I have seen people who are actually coming from, by the end of the month, they don't have anything available and they pay the full fees. They never ask how much are you going to charge, because they acknowledge the work that goes into it. They acknowledge the love, the care that a homeopath put in, because that's why they're coming to a homeopath and not going anywhere else.
It's a fine line, isn't it? It's very beautiful what you said, Nyla. It's a fine line, isn't it? Just moving on slightly from this, because with whatever we've just been conversing about, the fine line is very much between those who are passionate to help everybody and spread the knowledge of homeopathy to having the respect for homeopathy and then spreading that knowledge. It's, you know.
Yep. That's it. Yeah. And, you know, in all fairness, we had this takes us to what we were talking about before the recording button was pushed, how we changed the name of our charity from Home Foundation to the Institute for the Advancement of Homeopathy. And we stole the logo. Like, I'm coming clean, 100% stole it from the International Hanumanian Association. We took that logo and we just made it into ours. We figure it's been since 1881, we could have it, right? So, and the reason that we chose that is because the International Hanumanian Association was established because homeopaths lost their way and started doing homeopathy however they wanted. And here in the United States, the American Institute of Homeopathy, so this is the medical homeopaths established in 1844, right? They, at a certain point in 1870-something, they wanted to increase their membership. They said, oh, if we want homeopathy to be like everything, then what we have to do is we have to increase our membership so anybody can be a part of it. You don't have to be a homeopath and you can practice however you want. They even dropped the word homeopathy from their bylaws. So if you would just join, give them some cash, right? You were a member. So what happened? Homeopathy fell apart, right? So it fell apart. And so Lippe started the International Hanumanian Association as a way to restore the values and philosophy of homeopathy, but it was too late. So homeopathy took a nosedive. Now, everybody blames it on the Flexner Report. I don't know if you talk about that at all outside of the United States, but it was basically a review of educational standards. And a lot of the homeopathy schools were tanked. And so they blame it. They say, oh, it was Big Pharma and the Flexner Report that killed homeopathy. No, that was already 1910. Homeopathy in the United States fell apart late 1870s to early 1880s because people stopped practicing homeopathy as it was meant to practice. I wrote my dissertation on this. That's why I get a little in the weeds. But we chose that. We chose to take that logo and to revamp the name as just as a reminder, as an homage to, like, we don't want to see it go down on our watch in the same way it did. Like, for example, can I say something really naughty here? And Al,
Careful.
you
Say whatever
pulled,
you like.
well, I'm going to let you say it, but what happened recently? You've got a magazine on your. Do you want to?
So a question. So a question for you, Atik and Nyla. What defines us? What defines what we do? What's the difference between a homeopath and a blah blah?
Oh, that's a very
Just
context.
the principles, like the foundational principles of homeopathy. What constitutes the foundational principles?
Okay, so what makes us different, or what
Well,
differentiates us from
but it's the
others?
same question. Like if you are describing homeopathy to someone and they say, "Oh yeah, like a naturopath," then you're going to say, "No. We do this and this and this. You know, that defines what we do." So clearly, similars is the first thing that we would
Yeah,
always mention.
I was thinking similar, the law of
It's
similars.
not rocket
Correct.
science. So similars, when we talk about this, Denise says there's four principles of homeopathy. Personally, I talk about the eight principles of homeopathy,
I
but
can't
essentially,
remember anything, so I just shorten it to four for their attention.
you run out of toes.
Yeah.
So this beautiful magazine, lovely magazine, came out recently. You all know about homeopathy today, and I was intrigued to see on page five, Homeopathy 101. Right, that's the title, Homeopathy 101. And to me, that says, oh, we're in the foundations class. We're going to teach you what this is. And it says, what is homeopathy? And then it gives three big bullet points. Similars, like cures like.
Good, we like that.
We're good with that.
Yeah,
Two, totality of symptoms. We like that. We're okay with that. And
Perfect.
three, minimum dose. Right? And I
Good.
think you'd agree that those three things represent aspects of what we do.
Yeah.
And that's it. Those are the three things that define who we are. And I looked at it, I went, what's missing? And then I realized that they have airbrushed out of the definition of homeopathy single remedy. There's no mention here at all, like nowhere, not even in the fine print, not even in the corners. Now, I recognize that the single remedy is often compromised by some folks that call themselves homeopaths. And at the end of the day, I don't really have an opinion about that. You know, I've dealt with, protocols and give belladonna and give arsenicum, and, that's fine. And at the end of the day,
That
it's never really,
combo.
yeah. But these days it's changing a little bit. And I thought to myself, for the group that advocate for homeopathy in the public in North America, that's the NCH, this is their mouthpiece. They have redefined homeopathy and it's outrageous. It's outrageous. How can you change the definition? And you might want to edit this. If I
No.
lose my rag, but I agree that there are corners of homeopathy and shortcuts that are made by legitimate prescribers that do great work. Like you said right back at the beginning, if we are inclusive, sorry, that's the dog. If we're inclusive, then if a prescriber over there gives a sensation prescription not based on the principle of similars, are you going to say you can't call them a homeopath? Or they couldn't be described as a homeopath because they don't use similars for their clinical condition. I don't think anyone's going to say, no, you can't do that. In the same way that, a compromise every now and again on giving two remedies at a time. We all know that Hahnemann did it for that very brief period of time where he did the double remedy experiments, 1830 something. But then he just came out with a policy decision. He says, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. This is what we're going to do, single remedy. And we've all had that circumstance, I'm sure, where you go into Boots the chemist or you go to Whole Foods over here and you find that combination and it's got arnica and hypericum and it's got some lidocaine in it and you
When
give it anyway.
I stepped on a ground bee nest a couple of years ago and I got about 200 stings. Alistair made, he took a thing of water like this and he put in about five things: Vespa, aconite, arnica, I don't know what else, Ledum, and I was just taking a sip from it until we were sure I wasn't going to die. And then stable, look at the symptoms and go. I mean, that's, like there are always exceptions to every rule, but to airbrush out the idea that you give one remedy at a time and just say, no, we're not going to talk about that anymore. Like, that's crazy town. I
Yeah,
have to
I
tell my story as well, because from where I'm coming, my daughter, she's 18 now, and my real first encounter with homeopathy has helped was after she had recurrent tonsillitis, and I was giving her antibiotics every other month, and I was like, no, this is not right. I cannot be giving her antibiotics every other month. And at that time, because homeopathy is used back home in Pakistan, I never knew there are other homeopaths around the world that I can go to. And I researched because I was in Germany, and I knew that there are over-the-counter remedies available over there. So I researched, and there was a blend that was actually for tonsillitis. I now don't remember what remedies were in there, but there were, I think, three or four remedies in very low dose in X, and they were triturated together. And I do have to tell you, I gave her the remedy when she started to have symptoms, and she was fine. I didn't have to give her antibiotics that month. And the next month it came back, and I gave her again two or three doses of the remedy, and she never had tonsillitis again. And my a friend of mine, her son was going to have tonsillectomy, and I said, I tried it with my daughter, just like every mother would do. Why don't you try it? And she tried it, and 16 years later, her son still has the tonsils. So in that circumstances, for me, it helped. Now I'm a single remedy prescriber, but at that time, that helped and converted me. Oh, homeopathy can do miraculous things. And I was using all the over-the-counter mixtures for cold, for fevers. And then I did a 1 year course from Germany, and acquired my kit and started looking at the symptoms, started giving single remedies. And I have to say, the miracles of single remedies are just amazing. The remedy is there for longer, the healing response is for long time, and you just not see it on the physical level. You see the emotional and the personality changes. It's just not there to cure this symptom or that symptom. Just my story of polypharmacy there.
Yeah, no, great. What were we going to say, Atik?
Just now,
Yeah.
I was going to say there's going to be another announcement from Denise. No, I was just
Fantastic.
going to say, because we both use single remedies, and we're required for acutes and other complexes as well, but it just took me back as you were talking, Nyla, to the patient I have in the US who suffers from a debilitating condition which is termed as Parkinson's. And you see how I said that? It was very,
I like that.
copyright.
On the
So it was the problem with the patient was experiencing was waking up at night repeatedly with fear and rigidity. Aconite 10 mg, single dose, and it's gone. And this was years of it, the initial shock, and it was just a dominant sympathetic system, right? So it was just waking up and staying there. But the power of homeopathy, I'm mentioning it because it's just the beauty in it across the board of everything, How revolutionary, how somebody's sleep was disturbed to such an extent that he would get up in a panic and freeze for years. And you give monkswood and it's like gone.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I love that. I totally love that. And you know, and I really appreciate the way that Nyla brought in the fact that like there's this doorway in and it's totally fine and should be there. You know what I mean? Especially something acute. And we kind of know that that's the entry point. But if you become a practitioner who only uses the entry point and doesn't cross the threshold with the knowledge, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't think we should get rid of the entry points. I think they need to be there for the ease of that.
We need to understand our history to understand what we do now and why.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that photoshopping or airbrushing or whatever we want to say. And
it's so rewarding as well when we see.
Makes me mad.
Yep. I know.
I can feel it. I can feel that. I just felt that.
It's the venom that was in my shoulder that then went to my
jaw.
Are you going to?
No wonder you are attracted to those.
Yeah. You feel like Tom Hardy now.
Tom Hardy?
Venom. Marvel.
No reference point. No idea what you're talking about.
Alter Ego, Spider-Man.
Oh. Lost on me. I've never been on a...
superhero
those things. Never been on a. Denise, help me out.
A roller coaster.
I've never been on a roller coaster. Never watched a Marvel movie. I'm from New Zealand. We're very serious young.
Oh, people. Lord of the Rings.
Right. I've
watched all of that.
Yeah.
Never saw The Wizard of Oz until recently.
No, missed that. I had a very strange childhood. I really have to say.
We can be really good friends.
I knew all about Marla and Beethoven.
Everyone tells me these names and I'm looking. Okay.
You know, I tell you what, we're totally going off on tangent. Absolutely. Okay. There's a film with Kevin Costner. I don't know what it's called. It begins with F. The saddest film I've ever seen actually was a film with Kevin Costner. And I think it was called Forgiven or something like that. And it was basically a love story. And when he falls in love with this woman, and they eventually, the sad part was she passes away in his arms. But the acting, I mean, talk about leaving an impression, you know, that was, I mean, I'm picking one out of how many films are there on the planet, but it's such a deep thing. Why are you laughing? I'm being very serious and emotional.
No, I'm just loving it. I'm loving that, you know, this was a really moving
thing. It was extremely moving and very emotional because of his acting. But it just takes me to a homeopathic remedy as well, but which
was
actually
just thinking
point.
How he went to the acting from single remedy.
That's how my mind works.
And that's how his mind works.
Yeah, I went to my right brain. I just for some reason I was trying to be in the middle, but anyway, we're back to the Homeopathy Health Show, ladies and gentlemen, with Denise Strages and Alistair Gray, legends in the world of homeopathy.
I love it.
Somewhat opinionated, and but doing our best, right?
We
Yeah.
do
Yeah.
need to have opinions so that we can work towards something. I feel like it's needed. Someone who is much more worse than anyone else. They need to teach the younger generation who is coming and is not so confident about what their remedies can do, and then they become diluted.
Or
Exactly.
that's succession. Yeah,
Without succession. Without
it's
succession.
education and then re-education, right?
And
Isn't
that's
it?
what I say. Like, we can't blame anybody. Like, I don't think we should like point fingers at, oh, nobody's doing this. It's that we lost the thread and now it's up to us. Like, you know, there's a saying that, or a quote from Victor Hugo, there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And I think that for homeopathy, we had our first real wave sort of up until shortly after Hahnemann passed, and then we got diluted without succussion, right? Now the need for our services is greater than ever, and we see this. That's why so many people are coming to homeopathy. And I think it's incumbent upon us to ask the really difficult questions and to look at what we do and to say, how can we do this at the highest level possible? And so if we just sort of acknowledge that it is kind of going back to what we were talking about before, that it is all that in a bag of chips, then we need to reach that level, right? And so how can we do that? I mean, you know, we teach our students, we have like a whole course in research in our school and everything, and we always talk about you open with a research question, yeah? And so like there are all these questions that we can ask, and we ask questions about the efficacy of what we do and all that. But my research question is, what the hell is homeopathy? Right? Because I think that we have to really think about it. Like Al just talked about, he's on a rant with, how can we leave out one of the foundational premises of it? But if we don't really know better, we can't do better. So if we start to ask this question, then it takes us back. Like my research, what I'm excited about is the intellectual history of homeopathy. So not just our clinical practice, like that's what we do in our jobs, but going back and pulling back the curtain and saying, what was Hahnemann thinking? Where did he get these ideas? What was he trying to achieve? What can we learn from the what he set forth so that we can do it as well as possible? That is, I don't know. I just find that to be it's so motivating, right? It gets us to keep, I don't know, asking the questions and doing better.
Yeah, it keeps us grounded, actually. Keeps us near to our base where we have to be, because otherwise, if we don't have a base, we are not grounded enough, we can get lost in the maze.
It's so important to go back to scripture, isn't it? Which actually leads me on to talking about movies, talking about films, introducing homeopathy, the film. And I know that of course, we spoke about this last time as well. And Kim Aaliyah, by the way, and team, Kim Aaliyah and co, are on the show very, very soon as well. And that episode will be out very, very soon for those tuning in. But Denise, I know that you've just finished some recording with them, haven't you?
Yeah, they were just here. They stayed with us. They were here for a couple of days, and we filmed for 2 days for a follow-up to the movie. And the follow-up is, it's really interesting because now, so introducing homeopathy is kind of like getting everybody excited. And then the follow-up to it is investigating homeopathy. And it's a little bit more hard-hitting. It's kind of like the conversation we're having today, which is,
It is. It's a similar conversation.
yeah, like so they asked us really questions about, about the things that we don't want to talk about. And I think that's part of a maturity process, right? And so here were some of the fun things. So we filmed here, we filmed around the library and everything, but we also went to the archives. So Drexel University is a major university here in the United States, or 2 miles from where we live, the medical school. And that's where the archives are from the college, so from Herring's College and from the hospital. So all the stuff came, well, not everything from the hospital, but all the educational stuff. And so we went there and that's where I've spent a ton of time, because that's where I did most of the research for my dissertation. And so we got to go and take Kim and Julie in there, and we filmed in the archives. We brought out some of the old materials and, got to really work with that, which was, it was incredible. It was fun to bring other people there. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Amazing. Wow. Sounds so fascinating.
Yeah, I'll just riff off that because it was really an opportunity to hammer home the point that, we're weird, we are controversial, we have a plausibility challenge in homeopathy because of the lack of substance in our remedies or perceived lack of substance. But in 230 years, we haven't gone away. And there's a degree of, waves to our popular popularity, but we've never gone away. And therefore, just on that alone, we are deserving of investigation. It's like, what is that? And that is all of the questions that fascinate us as prescribers, practitioners, questions about one potency is better than the other. I like the sixth edition, you like the fourth edition, blah, blah, all of that stuff. But then, really, the questions around and the clinical questions around around effectiveness. Effectiveness means real world applicability. Efficacy means something in a laboratory shows that there's an effect. But I think we need to really focus on effectiveness. And so, that's what we do. We've got a conga line of projects at the moment that we're working on around, are we any good? It's a slightly different research question to what Denise said. She's like, what is that? Or what the hell is? This the research question in our research office is, what do practitioners do? Are we any good? How much does it cost? Is it effective? And so therefore, we're investigating the state of the profession, doing workforce surveys. We've published one from our mates in New Zealand just recently. What's going on in their profession, in their homeopathy corner of the world? And then we've got our questions around who's coming to see us, because who's coming to see us is different from who used to come and see us. We've got our questions around named conditions and are we any good with dealing with, well, we've got a clinical trial in Brazil on silicosis that's in the early phases. We've got clinical studies on perhaps postpartum depression that we're lining up with our ethics board, a study on insomnia and homeopathy and individualized homeopathy. We're going back to your point about Kim and Julian, it's not just about this is a phenomena, let's look at it and now let's investigate it. And with some rigor, and it was a real joy to have that opportunity, freedom to talk. It's a bit, it's kind of weird when the camera's on, but freedom to talk and explore the landscape of what we do.
Oh,
that's so brilliant. That's amazing because what happens is so when someone asks me this question, does homeopathy work? Or how does it work? And instead, I just don't want to defend myself. I just ask them, go figure it out. It works. I tell you it works. You go and figure it out because you want to use it.
I am so glad you said that. That is the least interesting question to my mind of all of the questions. Like, how does it work? Who cares?
Who cares?
I don't know. I don't
Exactly.
think anyone knows, really.
Exactly. This is what I say.
And so, that it works, let's investigate safety and it working. Let's investigate how much money you can spend or save using homeopathy, and observational studies and cohort studies and clinical studies, all of those.
It's interesting, that point is so interesting because when we go for any other modality, it's like, oh yeah, this works because they were touching my feet. And anyway, going off tangent there, but or they're touching my head.
Back to
I
the
could, I,
pedicure.
I'm sure I could use better words for this, but hey, we're on a flow. And but it's interesting, isn't it? When it comes to homeopathy, I don't know if it's just because the question has been raised billions of times is, how does it work? How does it work? How does it work? It's like, let's get past that now. We're past that stage,
I usually say we always science always catches up. So we are living in future. You need to catch up.
The magic of today is the science of tomorrow. And it's interesting because I think you mentioned quantum physics and so forth in the introduction, right? Have you heard of the Schumann resonances?
No.
So the Schumann, I was laughing at me because I'm obsessed with this stuff, but
We've got
it's
an announcement, ladies and gentlemen.
get my bugle again.
No.
So the Schumann resonances, it's been around since it was discovered in the 50s, actually, and it's the frequency of the Earth's resonance, and it is, I could tell you because I was actually doing some research, it's 7 point something megahertz here. It's extremely low frequencies, and it's been referred to as the tuning fork of life. It's 7.83 hertz. And it's Earth's resonance or Earth's equilibrium. And I wonder if that, which, it's a semi-recent discovery, right? It's 80 years ago. But I wonder if we also, in our quest to find how homeopathy works, that we've been looking in the wrong place. It's like when you lose your keys, you go underneath the search, underneath what do you call it? The lamppost. To look as opposed to where it's dark, that, it just as one possibility of things we don't know, right? And what's interesting about the research into the Schumann resonances is that it uses the same language we use to talk about how homeopathy works, like resonance in the tuning fork, but also magnets. It also looks at that, which is the example that Hahnemann used. So one of the things that when I'm, because I'm certainly not a physicist, and whenever I get into the, I go to the research conferences and they start talking about the mechanism of action and the memory of water, I knit. And because it's like the best I could do in the face of something I don't understand, I can at least be useful. But I think that, it's always going in one direction. It's always looking at water. And Hahnemann, at least as far as I can tell from my research, was extremely interested in water as the universal carrier, right? That's from fifth edition onward, but not necessarily as the answer to what the remedies do lies in water. He only got to that secondarily as an avoidance of aggravation, right? When he moved from the fourth edition, give a dose and wait on the pellet, to the fifth edition, put it in water, to the sixth edition, change the way that the dilution and succussion ratios are so that you minimize the agitation of the succussion and you maximize water as a way to minimize aggravation. But in no way does he say that that's the answer to what we do, right? He got to that from a completely different thing. And so it could entirely be that science, right? Since scientific revolution hasn't actually considered some of the mechanisms that move homeopathy. Like we're too far ahead. We're so far ahead of science. And so the mechanism of action, Alistair often says, it takes the oxygen out of the room with regard to homeopathy research. Like everybody wants to prove how it works, and it's fine. I mean, I think it would be amazing. Then maybe it gives us more legitimacy. I don't think it'll change Ernst's mind, right? But if we can start asking different questions, like if we look at what was Hahnemann doing and really investigate what was every source that he went to put this together, I think we'll come up with an answer maybe from a completely different way.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
But I'm just an Italian girl from New Jersey. Like, what do I know? I might be totally bananas on this.
Yeah, you know, this frequency. I didn't, when we were doing the proving of honey fungus, we didn't know what the substance is. We do it blindly. And I remember sitting in the room and everyone who's taken the remedy, I felt that we are conversing in frequencies.
Yeah.
I'm not a physics person here as well. But I wrote in my notes, it felt like everyone is emitting a frequency and we are talking, even though we are not talking, but we were talking. We could feel each other's frequency there, radio waves or whatever you call, this hurts, this, that hurts. But this, how is this possible after taking a substance in 30C in a group setting?
Right.
This is a lived experience. This is a lived experience. If you lived there, you have experienced that. Only you know what it means. What power do we have? What power these frequencies, these energy medicines? This is beyond our mind sometimes. Maybe we'll catch up with the power of it, but it is beyond.
Oh my gosh. It's so, I love that because I love thinking about provings and every time we do a proving and we connect on that level, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder, because one of the things like as Hahnemann developed the system, you know, because it wasn't, he didn't just like, you know, poof, it comes out. He changed it over time. That's empiricism, isn't it? That's reproducible science. And as he learns more and he modifies and perfects his system of the manufacturing of the remedies, like for example, at one stage, he said, you don't have to triturate a soluble substance. A succussion is a trituration. Then he goes back and he says, actually, you need to triturate. It's not the same, just succussing. You have to triturate even a soluble substance. So he's making changes along the way. But what's interesting is if you look at sort of how, because in my research, in my study, I've traced Hahnemann through the medical alchemical lineage, not Paracelsus, like a totally different medical alchemical lineage. And there's this way in which, well, most of the alchemical lineages, they talk about how mineral substances mature slowly over time. It's like they have this way, they have an energy about them. And when Hahnemann gets to chronic diseases, it's mostly mineral remedies, you know, it's a new theory based on or new paradigm for which an entirely new set of medicaments was required. And they're mostly minerals. They're 50% carbons in the first tranche, right? And so if you look at just, I'll go back to that Schumann resonance example, those Schumann resonances are almost the exact same frequency as alpha rhythms in the human brain. And that's from, so that's the earth, right? That's the minerals. And it's the same rhythm. Like, do you know what I mean? So like, and if you're doing a proving, you're just resonating at this frequency. It's this, it's all the same kind of thing. Mm. I don't know. It's really.
It's so interesting because I was reading something day before yesterday about gems. And there is research going on that they have a frequency to them and they emit various frequencies, even if they're just lying down, lying there. And this is what's coming up now. I think this is going to be the next research. What frequency, which frequency, because there is also music there. If you listen to this music, this is calming. If this is, listen to this music at this frequency, it will get you into this mood or bring you back. This is all what we are doing. We are talking with frequencies, with the frequencies that are going. And if we are mistuned, just going to help with another frequency that is bringing it back to tunement.
You know,
Tuning.
the reason I'm laughing now is because, you know, as you're talking about frequencies, there was this thing on one of the social media things. You know, they say this frequency is to calm and listen to it, and it's like dum 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 dum. And there was another one, so I put it against my ear. It's like, oh my God, I've got another problem now. It's not calming. It's like boom 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 boom. Can't get it out of my head. I feel like Kylie Minogue.
Oh my gosh.
No, you know why he's the
Yeah. No, I have to say one thing. I got a really bad headache. I'm still laughing. So, hey, that goes for something, okay? Yeah, right-sided top. Anyway.
You know what you need for your headache is to see Alistair in his Hanuman outfit.
Oh, I would love to
Brilliant.
do that. I would love to do that. Maybe I don't know about him, but I would love to see that. It looks like it.
There we go.
Got the pipe.
He's got a wig. He wears the whole wig. I don't think Hanuman ever had that kind of facial hair, to be honest,
Don't
but
know, definitely not. It's not convincing. It's just like some bloke dressed up in a silly outfit.
people are crowd
Some
pleaser.
bloke.
We had
Totally.
a we Denise and I to fundraise for our foundation held a gala back in at the end of May, and there were some auction items, and one of the auction items, it seemed like a great idea at the time, was let's Denise is, if you don't know this, is an amazing chef, incredible. And so it was dinner at Denise and Al's place in the library, so here, and people bid on it, and they bid a lot of money. Like, we made a truckload of money, but
4 million.
the no, it wasn't 4 million.
Not 4 million. I think 400.
Maybe
It's about 400 at
we have
the
another announcement to make.
But it did involve me getting into the frock, into the gear, and
He greeted everyone as they came in,
Oh,
dressed as
brilliant.
Hanuman. Yeah, with a cocktail. It was pretty
Nice
good.
little cocktail. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Wow.
Must be so fun.
Yeah,
Oh,
it
just
is.
love
I tell you what, you
loving
know, it's endlessly fun.
it.
And I tell you what, a lot of hard work as well, you know, and there's those two things, you know, those two totalities exist at the same time. We love what we do. We, you know, sometimes look at each other and we have a rant about a student or about an article or, you know, but it really is overwhelmingly meaningful and fun. And I love it. Totally love it.
I couldn't agree more. We couldn't agree more because,
We couldn't agree more. Yes, it was such a beautiful evening with you both. And I have to tell you, instead of one, we have recorded two podcast episodes today.
of the
Because
Homeopathy Health Show with
on
Denise and Al.
the it was just so brilliant. We couldn't stop
So good.
talking. And we
Wow, so
said,
good.
let's do it.
So this is going to be another two-part special for 2025.
Wow.
In
Amazing.
2026, I'm now looking forward to what is going to I hopefully not A&E, but what's going to happen.
God forbid, our turn, isn't it?
I was just thinking maybe it's our turn next
Oh
year.
no. Oh no.
Hey, let's talk more, you know, and in a few months. Last time I said that, you ended up over 12. But anyway,
But look, let's
hey.
do that. We will have, I mean, not that we've got any shortage of opinions, as I mentioned before, but we will have in a month or two a number of other research papers that will have been published and more. So let's do it. Love it.
Yeah,
Wonderful. It's
we do need to talk in the language of the modern world as well sometimes. Yeah, look here, the research is there. You can use it if you want. We are going to do our work.
Yeah.
We are going to help.
It's, yeah.
You can't stop us. We are still going to help. We have been helping for 230 years. We're still here. We are going to be here, and we are going to take over.
We are not going anywhere. So just
There's
get used
nothing
to it.
more powerful than an idea whose time has come, right? We got to keep saying it's this is our time. This
This
is
is
time.
our time. This is.
Yeah, we got this.
It's not about them or us. It's about let's work together. Why can't we? Like,
Well,
I remember my my son's pediatrician in Germany. She was a medical doctor, and she would give me a homeopathic remedy first, and a herbal remedy next, and then if they both didn't help, would she resort to another medicine, whatever was needed at that time, but it would resolve after the first one. So why can't we work together? We can work together.
That's actually the mission of our foundation, is to bring together traditional medicine with homeopathy. And the term traditional used loosely, like traditional medicine meaning, you know, any sort of the term as it means, but also allopathic medicine. And our work with the Faculty of Homeopathy and the AIH in America is, you know, bringing, really trying to bring validity to our programming to get more doctors and nurses and allied medical professionals trained. We want people who can actually get in the system and start making that change from within. One of the things that we talk a lot about is like, imagine you get into an ambulance and you can get aconite or arnica in that moment, or someone who's in labor can get colophyllum to start their contractions instead of Pitocin, right? Just like you said, Nyla, about if the medical doctors could give that, you know, like we've got this program in palliative and end of life care that we launched last year. And we trained what 64 people in the first go around and then another 15. So we've got under 100, but getting close to it. And this is, of course, why we want our $4 million, right? So we can have a space for this palliative care thing. But and my dad actually passed earlier this year, and he was in hospital.
Oh, our
and,
condolences.
Oh, thank
from,
you.
From us and everyone on the UK Health Radio Network. Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
What was really, there was some beauty in being able to use homeopathy in his last days because it was kind of sudden and he was in hospital. But the one thing that happened was that I was hesitant to give remedies at certain points because he was in the ICU and was on a lot of medication. And so I was on the phone with our medical director, Dr. Molly Punzo, and her husband, who is an ICU doc and a pulmonologist. And we were having to literally go through the homeopathy and the medical part because with each medicine, we didn't want to put him in any sort of further compromise because if you're outside the system, to work within it could be problematic, right? So it became as clear as could be for me that we need people who understand what we do in the system as much as they, you know what I mean? It needs to be this reciprocal system because we can't do the full extent of our work if we are separate. And so even though homeopaths like to be renegade and whatever, sit outside the system, we need the people who can do that work. We just call them the muggles, but we need the homeopaths who can do that, right? So that we can serve all the people. Yeah.
Yes.
Like if somebody's on home hospice care, you can support them with all the remedies for terminal agitation, for the death rattle, Cheney-Stokes breathing, all that. But if they're hooked up to a lot of machines, we can't know that we're safely doing something, right? So this is the goal that we have is by elevating the standards, by bringing accountability, by showing ourselves for who we are, that we can change incrementally the medical system so that we can provide the highest level of care, right, in every situation. That's the intention that I want to put out there. That's what I want us to be, you know, resonating. If we get this into our consciousness that we're going to do this, we're going to elevate the standards all together. It doesn't leave people behind. We bring people with us, right?
Yes.
This is what we got to do.
That's what we need to do. We need to hold hands and work together.
Hey, I have a question, Nyla, before you. I have another question. I have something to say to reflect and ponder upon before you end this double jam-packed episode, okay? So Rachel Roberts from the Homeopathic Research Institute was on last year. You can check that out, of course, on all the podcast apps. And we were talking about the work of the HRI, but she said something that's always stuck with me. And Nyla, you know this very well. She said that we were talking about the world. We were talking about healthcare, and she said, one of the things is, and I leave her, ladies and gentlemen, you can fill in the blank, but she said, one of the reasons is homeopathy can't be patented. And that creates a big problem for everybody else. So, hey, there's food for thought. Anyway, over to you. I was very mindful of my words there.
Thank you. I would love to thank you for coming here, spending time with us. It was such a beautiful time. My honor. Loved talking to you both. And hope to see you soon again without any insect bites or falls.
Yeah, but plenty more announcements.
Plenty more announcements. And yes, hopefully you'll raise those 4 million for the beautiful project you're looking forward to.
Yes,
love I that. I think what you're going to do is worth more than 4 million. So people, I would request everyone who is listening, go. And even if you can donate a little bit, that will help.
You know, the tagline for the Homeopathy Health Show, Naila, as you know, is be inspired and join the conversation. So I think as homeopaths, we have been inspired. Yeah. And thank you for joining the conversation.
Loved the conversation there. Loved it.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.